role
competing with
in the governance of the station, and so that the LSB gets to actually have a role in running the station.
Yeah.
Thank you, Benito. Remember, folks, to put your ballots in the mail in the envelope provided by December 6th. Thank you, candidates. Thank you also to Luke Stewart for helping set this up, to our inimitable engineer, David Kelly. That concludes our forum tonight. Be sure to tune in tomorrow and Thursday at the same time. I'm Election Supervisor John Bush. To listeners, all, for tuning in and for your very thoughtful questions and comments, thank you and good evening.
And return the ballots.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Jordan, WPFW's Development Director. And you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington. Live from Ben's Next Door, 12th and U Streets Northwest, it's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon, Mark Levine, and Terry D. Kester. It's seriously funny, and it begins right now.
Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon.
And behind me on the big screen is
Terry D. Kester.
And we the D is for
guys,
what?
I tell you, this is beautiful.
Actually, we are live at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street, and you should come join us because tonight is, drum roll please, the final Raucous Caucus on WPFW.
This is the last show, isn't it, Mark?
We don't need a drum roll. We need taps.
That's right.
Can you play those for us, Terry?
How about one of those New Orleans, the funeral marches that they do, you know, at the funerals? It's like a jazz.
Right, it's like a jazz funeral.
They dance and all.
Yeah, but the Raucous
Dancing
Caucus,
on our graves, on our own graves.
If you want more information, the Raucous Caucus will continue, but that information is on my website at marklevinetalk.com. Check it out. You'll find out more information about more about future Raucous Caucuses. I do want to say, though, that Garland and I are going to be on.
This is our last show on WPFW at 7 p.m.
That's true. This is our last show on WPFW at 7 p.m.
Right.
on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. That's it.
So,
yeah. And where do they go again, Mark?
They come to 1211 U Street. Come see us. We'd like to see our old regulars show up for our final show here at Ben's. And we'd love to see you. Go ahead.
What time does firing squad show up?
I think that's at 8:15.
Yeah.
Are you going to be ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. All right. That's
There's an extra blindfold and a cigarette here with your name on it, Terry.
Absolutely.
I have no doubt.
I think Terry got the show ended just so he wouldn't pay me the $3 he owes me.
You know, Mark? That's
oh,
it.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Three big was for me, Terry.
But, you know, I'm still coming after you, Terry. This won't end it. He owes me $3, of course, because he bet that John McCain would win the election. He doubled the bet to just before the election, then on election night.
On Thurston Howell III.
Why did I say John McCain? John McCain and Mitt Romney. I confused the two of them. They're
yeah,
both
right.
such hapless idiots.
And they both can't remember how many houses they have.
That's true. That's true. Excuse me. It doubled it to $2, and then the night of the election, if you saw our election night extravaganza, I bet that Barack Obama would get over 300 electoral votes for a third dollar that I have yet to collect from Terry DeKester.
Well, there's one problem, Mark, and I think this is key, and I think this is why that this is the last night of the Raucous Caucus. I'm pretty sure there has been a recount, and Mitt Romney did, in fact, win. And you know how Mitt feels about public radio, and that's why
I see.
Believe it or not, there's some Tea Party email going around from, like, the Tea Party Express, where they believe that they found a way that Mitt Romney can still be president, but they're completely wrong. It's because they don't understand the way the Constitution. They said something about if a certain number of states don't turn in their electoral votes, then it goes to the House, and the House will choose the president. But they've got the electoral college votes confused with the House votes, of course, which is not hard to imagine that the Tea Party would
I'm
get
not
confused.
Sure how they're going to prevent the electoral college from meeting and voting, given that 332 people are scheduled to vote for Barack Obama.
Not to mention the little problem they have with math, and that is, if they get the states that he lost to withhold their votes, he'll still have 270 electoral votes because the ones that he won.
Well, so he went 332 to nothing. That works for me.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, guys. I know we're going to be talking about a lot of things and everything on our last show here tonight. But, you know, Texas is seceding from the Union. They've turned in a petition to the president. The petition, if it gets more than 25,000 votes, the president, the White House, has to respond. And Texas turned in 125,000 signatures on their petition. Also, Oklahoma turned in a petition. Colorado sent in a petition, and Alabama and Louisiana.
Didn't they try this once before in 1861? I seem to recall something.
It's the same people, and you know,
really, they're very old.
You know what I say? I say all the ones in those states who want to go, we just give them Texas. And the ones in the states that want to stay, we let them stay. We just send them all to Texas.
You've been trying to get rid of Texas for a long time.
And it can be like Somalia, you know, where they have really no real government, and they can wander around like pirates and eat each other, which is eventually what's going
to
happen.
And everyone will be required to have a gun. So that'd be good.
The only mistake, you know, that Abraham Lincoln made, I mean, we made a couple, but the only big mistake was letting Texas back in.
You're right, yeah.
You know, that was the problem.
I don't think we can undo that. Let me announce, because I want to make it very clear, that neither Terry nor Garland nor me are leaving WPFW. Garland, you're going to be hosting a new show with me on Friday.
Every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m.
Starting a week from Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. So you'll get me while you're driving home.
News View. We're going to have great guests on there, and Mark and I are going to have a blast.
And Terry, you're still hosting What's at Stake.
Still doing What's at Stake, yeah. Monthly doing What's at Stake, and about twice a month. And we'll be bringing on incredible scholars. In fact, this coming Wednesday, tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Joel Kotkin, one of the most profound futurists in the country, and his newest book, America in 2050, when we reach 400 million people. And we'll also be talking about his previous book that is The Demise, frankly, living in a post-family world as the families disappear from the horizon. One simple statistic to entice you to listen tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock is 70% of the women in Washington, D.C. live in a home with no children. 70%. That is a phenomenal number and change. And we'll be talking about that on What's at Stake at 10 a.m. And What's at Stake is continuing but moving until 11 a.m., not this Wednesday, but the first Wednesday in December. This Wednesday, 10. The first Wednesday in December will be 11 a.m.
So there's going to be lots of changes. You can hear Terry 11 a.m. Soon for 10 a.m. tomorrow, but soon it'll be 11 a.m. You can hear Garland and me every Friday at 5 o'clock. To find more about the Raucous Caucus, go to my website at marklevinetalk.com. We're going to do something on Sunday.
We're not dead. It's the Raucous Caucus. It's not over.
But we're not dead. We continue to be raucous. Oh. And if you want to join us, by the way, as we reminisce about our Raucous Caucus shows right here on Pacifica Radio, please come join us at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. Many of you, I can think of a lot of people, Anthony and Bill.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
A lot of our regulars like to grace the Raucous Caucus. This is your night to come and say goodbye. So, please come join us there. I was thinking about some of my favorite Raucous Caucus shows. And I was thinking about the night we all met. I don't think we'd met before then. I think I'd met Garland briefly at a WPFW function.
Yeah, right.
But I think it was a rainy night. I don't know. My memory was a rainy night. Was it a rainy night? We're in the studio.
Garland and I had met. You and I met at one of the meetings.
Right.
One of the station meetings. But that was about it. But we really collided, I think is the correct word. You know, that one night a number of years back.
It was like a fifth Tuesday.
Who's going on?
And we didn't know whose turn it was. So we all three showed up.
And if you remember, if I'm not mistaken, it must have been 2008. Because I think somewhere during the inauguration, Mark and I, because each of us were doing separate shows.
That's right.
And Mark and I did a show together. And I think Terry was supposed to do the final, something like that. Terry called in on the phone and we all ended up talking together.
Right.
And having it like we always do. And we had a blast. And then when things did change in a couple months, we had already done this and it worked out so well that,
were here for four long years.
To give credit where credit's due, it was Bobby Hill's actual idea in trying to deal with the three of us of simply
which was no easy task.
Definitely not an easy task. that he decided to sick us on each other instead of on the world.
I guess he figured if he had us all in one place at the same time,
we'd eat each other.
It'd be a whole lot easier for him, kind of like corralling, right, you know, mad exactly. dogs.
Probably so. So, gentlemen, what are some of your favorite shows? I mean, a few of mine come to mind. I thought the Death Penalty show was a
Oh, my gosh. Wasn't that something? That was a tearjerker. And for those of you who might not have seen that show, and we can remind our people about a few of the shows, we had Kirk Bloodsworth, who was a man who had been convicted of the rape and murder of a 10-year-old girl who had went to 2 years on death row, 8 years and 11 months in prison, serving life without parole, and he didn't do it, and DNA evidence was invented, found, whatever, the ability to test people for DNA evidence, and he was the first person in the United States to be released, from DNA evidence. And, you know, and we talked about it, and one of the things we discussed is how many people have been on death row or have lost their lives, where in cases, where there was no DNA evidence, maybe an eyewitness, maybe somebody thought they saw something or flimsy evidence, maybe the person didn't have any money, and they ended up fried.
I'm just thinking about all the many shows we've talked about. I mean, how many shows did we do on health care and Obamacare and universal care and during that whole debate?
We've done shows and everything. I did want to mention in terms of Bloodsworth.
Yeah.
I think that's the correct name. You know, one of the beautiful things about that show is the man has no bitterness whatsoever.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is shocking, really. Because you think he would.
He still deserves your support because he is very much involved in anti-death row, death execution, you know, et cetera, in various states and capital punishment. He's really very much involved politically and deserves your support. And it was a great show.
What was really interesting about that show, what was really great about that show, was the man that we were talking to.
Oh,
and
yeah.
to recognize such a just a sweet, gentle, wonderful person, and to see this person on death row, afraid for his life, knowing that he didn't do anything. I mean, that was a tearjerker. It was all I could do to keep from having like tears running off out of my eyes and running off the stage, listening to him tell his story.
Which shows we haven't been jovial all the time.
Oh my God.
Well, we have been most of the time, but I'm thinking about other guests we've had, people like Congressman John Conyers.
Oh yeah.
or Congresswoman Edwards. Or others that have come on the show and really joked with us. Conyers joked with, you know, just as much as we did.
I think we should give a call to Conyers, you know, because he is one of our biggest supporters for the Raucous Caucus.
Can we call him the patron saint?
He was the official hero
of the Raucous Caucus. Hero.
And, you know, he could probably start a national movement to get the Raucous Caucus on the air anywhere it wants to be.
There you go, nationwide.
Let's give John a call.
Okay. Well, we should. I'm just talking about other topics we've dealt with. You know, we spent a lot of time on the Tea Party, and now, in hindsight, I think they were a flash in the pan. We were really worried about them for a time, but I'm not so worried anymore. Terry, what do you think?
I'm still worried about them.
Really?
I think they're just, I mean, there's this cop in, what is it, Florida, that I wouldn't say he's necessarily part of the Tea Party, but a cop who said he was willing to assassinate Obama. You know, that anger is still out there. The Tea Party fanatics are still out there. I'm still a little worried about them.
You know, here's what I think about the Tea Party. Interestingly, I was looking at a blog article I wrote a couple years back, and I think it's come to pass. We're not as much worried about the Tea Party as the mainstream Republican Party
is. That's true.
They are a horrible thorn in the side. They keep nominating these Todd Akins and Murdoch, whatever the heck. Richard Murdoch. These real kooks that can't get elected. And even now, Congressman Rockefeller in West Virginia is about to retire. There's a very popular Republican that Capito, I think is her name, that the Republican Party, the Republican Party is about, wants to nominate, and she's a very, very moderate Republican, and they think, well, she's moderate enough, she can get elected. The Tea Party doesn't like that a bit, and they're looking for, of course, a kook.
Right.
And now the mainstream Republican Party. So the Tea Party said we're ready to go to war with them before we'll have another one of those moderate Republicans. And the mainstream Republican Party is like, oh no, they're going to throw some kook out there again and hand the Democrats. So they're a real problem for the Republican Party.
And whatever happened to our grassroots response to the Occupy movement? We were very excited about that again a year, 2 years ago. You don't hear much about them.
Were
anymore.
They, Terry? Where was the Occupy movement the flash in the pan?
What do you think, Terry?
Yeah, that's one of the big frustrations, and I think I really do think it's a failure of the Occupy movement. Now, there have been some meaningful demonstrations in New York, and I think a few other cities. Nothing really in Washington, D.C., but their determination to deny leadership mm-hmm. is just not realistic in terms of any movement. Now, they may not have had the best leader or the most perfect leader or the leader they wanted, and all kinds of things could have happened, but to deny leadership and therefore one or a dozen even in each city spokespersons who really could be identified with the movement. Other than that, it's just a mass of people showing up. And it didn't work. That's my honest opinion. It didn't work.
Yep. But
didn't we say that right here on the Raucous Caucus, in fact? When we discussed, the three of us all pretty much agreed on that the problem with the Occupy, when it was going on, and we were on the air when they were in their tents, and we were saying, basically, you guys and girls out there, you're going to have to decide upon leadership, you're going to have some organization, and you're going to have to interact with members of Congress. Members of Congress were ready to listen to them. They had the power right there in their hands to do something, but they refused to interact with the political system, and they refused leadership, and they pretty much stuck a knife in their own backs.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite moments, one where I think we really made a difference on the Raucous Caucus, was the night we held Obama intervention. Remember that night? I really enjoyed that. We got out there. We did what anyone does in intervention with someone that's got a drug or alcohol problem. We showed Obama our love because you love the person who you're having intervention for, and you basically make clear to them that even though you love them and want to help them, that you can't live with them going on. And Barack Obama's problem was he was compromising too much with the Republicans. He just agreed to extend the Bush tax cuts. And we hosted a very, very powerful intervention. I remember it was a Facebook site and all of that. And I got to say, it was soon after that that Barack Obama stopped giving in to Republicans and started going back to his roots. I think we made a difference. Terry, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, if now is the question. I mean, if he falls off the wagon now and goes back to the nice guy, Mr. President Obama, you know, it's not going to work. He's going to have to use the bully pulpit. He can do it in a graceful way, but he's going to have to use it. He's going to have to. We're going to find out on the fiscal cliff. You know, we're going to find out if he needs another, you know, intervention or not. And if he does, well, then obviously we've got to gather. We've got to come on WPFW and every other station in the world and another intervention started if he doesn't hold his ground on the fiscal cliff. We'll see very soon. If
you know, he told us we have to push him from the left, and we did push him.
We did. And, you know, to piggyback on what Terry's saying, the president's saying all the right things now. You know, he's saying that he's going to stand his ground.
Well,
and here's the thing about it. He could not be in a better position because the numbers, the polls are in favor of the Democrats. I personally think right now the Democrats would be far better off to let this thing go, to let the tax cuts expire.
Right. Go over the cliff.
Yeah. Let these tax cuts expire, because as soon as they expire, now the Democrats, what they're doing is they're saying, we want to lower taxes. We're going to lower, and they're submitting bills, and they're submitting plans and objectives that are going to allow them to lower taxes.
Lower the Republicans, from the higher rates after they expire.
And the Republicans have to stop them from lowering taxes.
Right.
But of course, they're only going to be for certain people. You know, so I think they couldn't be in a better position right now. Let them expire, and then say, look, guys, we're going to fight the lower taxes for the 98%.
Are you saying, Gardner, let us go off the fiscal cliff?
I'm saying let's step off the fiscal curb. I think
First of all, it's a slope. It's not really a cliff.
Let's change the metal floor.
It's a gentle slope. I mean, really, people talk about it as a cliff, but that's when they take 1 year's worth of spending and 1 year's worth of taxes, and they pretend like it's all going to happen January 2nd, and it's not. It would happen, 1/52nd of it would happen every week, and so I think they can do something after January.
But not to mention one other thing, Mark, and as it gets close, when it gets down to the last few hours, the Republicans are going to be pushed into a tight corner to strike a deal before those last few hours, because they don't want to see those tax cuts expire. And then the Democrats really have them by the short and curlies, as they say. The Democrats really have them, and they can say, we're going to lower tax. So I don't think they want to get to that point, because they know that they are screwed if they ever get to that point.
And let's remember, I mean, this is, we were wishing Obama well at the fiscal cliff. We didn't think, Terry, you don't forget that other bet I made with you. You bet that Barack Obama would not get the health care law passed. Remember that? I think I won $1 on that bet. It was by July or August of the year that it was passed.
I didn't say that. I just bet you a dollar periodically to keep your inspiration up in your eyes. That's the only reason I do that.
Okay, well, but the point is that we spent a lot of time talking about healthcare, and I think on the Raucous Caucus we gave people details that they just didn't know about, you know, that a 26-year-old could be kept on people's plans, that the profits of the healthcare companies would be kept down, that people with pre-existing conditions would be covered. You know, we gave those details throughout the process when people were complaining about it, and we spent a lot of time on healthcare, all of us saying it's not as good as universal care would be, but pointing out that it was a lot better than it was.
Yeah, and what another important thing that we did was this, throughout the healthcare debate. We told people to call Congress, to call their representatives. We gave out the phone number. So we encouraged people, and we've always done this on the Raucous Caucus.
That's true.
Encourage people to take part in the democracy, in the democratic process, to call. We've encouraged people not to just sit down there and listen and think that calling into a radio show is participating. It's not.
And how many shows did we did on the big money corporations, on all the things that corporations were doing to either influence our elections or to punish unions, fire workers, just the Citizens United.
Walmart.
I can't count the number of shows we did on those questions, Terry.
I didn't want to interrupt what you were saying, Mark, but I did just get a call from Ford Motor Company. I want to know if you guys are sympathetic to that. They are willing to bankroll the Raucous Caucus as a national show. Should we accept the corporate money?
That's right. We never have, and we never will, and that's a problem for us. Because, you know, if you're willing to sell out, we do a lot better.
Wait a minute, let's find out how much before we decide whether we're going to sell out here, you know? Hold on here.
Garland, how much is your soul worth?
Come to think of it, you know, Walmart isn't all that. They're pretty nice in it. They give them water sometimes. They give them water once a day, kind of like a dog.
Once a day.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, there you go.
No, but we have, you know, I mean, obviously all of us feel very strongly about the corporate takeover in America. And, you know, that's something people still got to remember. You're talking about activism. We've got to stay active, and the public has to stay active. This battle is not over just because the election is over. There's a lot coming up that's really, really important, and we've got to be involved in it. So now is not the time to sit back and say, oh, well, the Democrats won and everything's fine. Uh-uh. We've got to fight. We've got to continue to fight. And one of the things we got to fight is against all these Citizens and United thing. We've got to get some kind of law and or constitutional amendment. Not a constitutional amendment. That's too big. But Congress can write a law that basically...
The Disclosure Act would go a long way. At least if all these rich corporations are going to control our elections, we should know who's pulling the levers. You know, who's behind all this money.
Yeah, but you hit the nail on the head really, because in 2008, one of the things, and we've discussed this on our show, that people did was they voted, Barack Obama got in, and then they went and sat down on a chair somewhere and said, okay, where's that change I ordered? But this time has to be different. This time, and I understand that OFA, Obama's organization, and the labor organizations have already said, we're not sitting down this time after the presidential election. We're marching forward. We're pushing forward to 2000. We're going to get people back out to vote in 2014. We've got to keep the fight up this time. We threw in the towel, and for one thing that happened was, for instance, during the healthcare debate, during a lot of things, the president was getting a lot of pressure from the right, but there was nobody from the left. He was only hearing from the right. So this time he's got to hear from the left, and he's got to hear really, really loud from the left, and it'll make a difference.
A lot of people stayed home in 2010. A lot of people stayed home in Virginia in 2009.
Yep.
That's how we got Governor Bob McDonnell.
Oh,
I hope that people will remember that in Virginia, at least, and we have lots of listeners in Northern Virginia, throughout the state of Virginia, that there is another election coming up this November 2013 for governor, for many, many seats in the Virginia legislature. And it's the legislature that draws the gerrymandered lines, and that's the reason why we don't have a House of Representatives that's representative of the American people. As we pointed out on this show, a majority of Americans voted for Democrats in the House of Representatives. The Democrats got more votes than the Republicans if you add up all the votes, but because the local Republicans drew all the lines, we didn't get a representative Congress. So that tells people they have to vote not just in presidential years, but in their local elections, Virginia in 2009, and definitely in the midterms coming up in 2014, Virginia's 2013.
And people got to remember, too, I mean, the corporations, the Cook brothers, et cetera, they are not just giving to presidential candidates. They are more and more focusing on state legislator candidates.
ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange. is almost entirely focused on state legislatures, and they do it because they do it quietly and out of sight, and because nobody knows the name of their state legislator. So don't forget those elections. And by the way, speaking of elections, another thing we really focused on in the Raucous Caucus, I'm very proud of the many, many shows we did on how they were trying to keep people from voting.
Oh, yeah.
In Ohio and in Pennsylvania and in Texas and in South Carolina and in Florida. We talked about how they did shortages of machines and long lines and banned early voting and tried to keep blacks from voting on the Sunday after the election. And we went through those lawsuits and we brought people's attention to it, which, let's face it, a lot of people didn't know that there were problems voting. We brought it to people's attention.
You know, another really important aspect of that, guys, is, the Obama administration did challenge all of those laws that were trying to suppress voters.
And we won in the courts.
People were saying, some of our listeners even saying that we love you guys, but some of them were saying there's no difference between Obama and, you know, Mitt Romney or Republicans and Democrats, and yet we all agree on the problems that are within both parties. But that's a crucial difference right there. If you had a Republican president and a Republican attorney general, I doubt they would have challenged any of those suppression voter laws.
Well, you know, that's something that another thing that we've done. We've argued back and forth with callers who say that there's no difference, and we always make the point. We don't dispute that there are similarities. We don't dispute that there's similarities. That's like saying there's no difference between Mark and Terry and I. You can name 100 similarities. We got fingers, we got toes, we got feet, but there are many differences, age difference, height difference, weight difference. We've never disputed that there aren't similarities between every president, Barack Obama and God only knows who. But the problem that we have is those callers call in and they say there's no difference, which is ridiculous. They simply say, well, I'm going to only focus on the similarities and pretend that there are no differences, which ends up a very painful thing. Because the differences that are there can make the difference between life and death for some people. Between the difference for some person who is in the military and gets kicked out and loses 19 and a half years of military time. You know, between the difference of whether someone can vote because of their race, whether someone can stay in this country. Those are significant differences, and we got people running around saying there's no differences. And what I've always said is, because they're not in that position. If you're getting food stamps, if you're in Medicaid, you know there's a difference. It's easy for people who are living pretty decent to say there's no difference, because it's not going to hurt them if a Republican gets in like it's going to hurt the next guy.
You know, I've been thinking about all the callers that we've had, including the ones that say there's no difference. We've had callers that say that Terry's right and you and I go wrong.
Oh, well, Mark,
callers
might I add,
that say that I'm right and you two are
might
wrong.
Might I add.
And callers that say that you're right and then we two are wrong.
Might I add, we've had callers that called me a white supremacist.
That's right.
Which is really tough.
We won't mention his name, but yes.
That was one of my favorite shows, guys. I mean, not because you're a white supremacist.
Well, we've also had
even say that.
It's pretty crazy.
Nothing else proves we didn't screen our callers.
That's
caller participate. There's a lot of them like Tesla, etc., but that we're really going to miss that have just been fantastic supporters. But we let everybody get their voice in.
I can go to my grave saying one time in my life
you've been called a white
supremacist. I was called a white supremacist.
There you go. Now, but we've had callers. We had Republicans. We had people on the far left. We had, I remember we did a powerful show on race where a woman called in and was talking about the difference between how light-skinned African-Americans are treated versus dark-skinned. And I think we all were just quiet for 10 minutes as she gave a very, very powerful description of what had happened to her in her own life. I still remember that caller. It's just one of our best.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, there's certain things that you'll never forget. I'll never forget, of course, being called a white supremacist by a caller, but I'll never forget that powerful call. It was just so emotional and it made the point. And, you know, another thing that was a very interesting show. Oh, go ahead, Terry.
We had so many good callers. I mean, RJ and Bill. I mean, I can't even think of all the names, a number of them who were repeats, and they were repeats, and we honored them because their points of view were profound and challenging.
And Tesla would never let us forget Ethiopia and the problems there.
Exactly. Frank, we should forget things like what's going on in Ethiopia.
No.
We concentrate on a lot of the big things, but we needed the callers, and I thank the callers for reminding us there's problems worldwide that we have to deal with.
And we've been all over the world. We got to tell you, we got to wrap up right now. When we come back, we're going to talk more about reminiscing.
We got to talk about Walmart a little bit.
Caucus shows. If you want to come down and join us, please do. 1211 U Street. It's our last night at Ben's Next Door. We hope you'll join us. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this.
The following statement is by a candidate in the WPFW local station board election.
My name is Benito Diaz. I'm originally from Puerto Rico, and I'm a longtime D.C. resident and have dedicated my entire life to the struggle of all working people and people of color around the world for democracy, freedom, social justice, and social change. As a current LSB member, I have focused my efforts on enhancing the oversight responsibility of the board, promoting dialogue and understanding between staff and the LSB. We must diversify the forms of our fundraising to pursue off-air revenue generation as a first priority so as to lessen the dependence on continual fund drives and the burden on listeners and programmers which this entails. My name is Benito Diaz. I ask for your vote and other people so democratically inclined.
The preceding candidate statement does not necessarily reflect the views of WPFW or its staff. More information about all of the candidates can be found at the station website, wpfw.org.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
And welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with
Garland Nixon
and
Paul Revere.
Terry Kester.
Terry Kester, who's wearing his Paul Revere hat.
My horse is outside.
You know, you must have worn that hat as a young man.
He was yelling, "The British, the British are coming."
You were probably a child back then when you first wore that hat, right?
Please. Mark, I'm still a young man. That's why I'm these wonderful, wild, raucous debates and bets with you.
Yeah, how many age jokes did I make in the 4 or 5 years of the Raucous Caucus?
All of them. I don't think there's one left that you could.
I think I made quite a few. I picked on poor Terry a bunch. I'm just thinking about the names we called each other. I called
Bloom and Doom.
A pessimist?
Bloom and Doom. I forgot who was Gloom and who was Doom.
You called me Pollyanna and I called you Cassandra.
I think you called Terry and I Gloom and Doom, right?
Yeah, at one point, yeah, Gloom and Doom. I'm not sure who was which.
You know, let's face it. I mean, we are, you know, and I have to share it with you guys. You know, we are the doctors of sagacity.
Yeah.
You know, whether or not the show is on WPFW or wherever it winds up, sagacity, we've got nailed. You, me, we got it.
Well, I think we always argued that despite the fact that our topics are very serious, you don't have to deal with serious topics with mournful tones, that you can discuss very serious topics and still have some fun doing it. And that's something that I think we really tried to accomplish over the last 4 years.
Yeah, I think we even got a caller that was angry at us one night because we were laughing and joking about serious topics. But, you know, you got to laugh to keep from crying, guys. You know, humor is, and I don't know, you know, one thing about, I know about myself and I know about these other two guys. One of the ways that we all deal with stress, one of the ways that we deal with things that upset us is through humor. All three of us are kind of people that we're in a plane and the plane's, you know, hurtling down towards Earth and we're going to make the last great hurrah is going to be a joke before it hits the ground.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be on that plane with you.
Well, I don't know. I'll be joking then. Yeah. But folks, by the way, so if you haven't figured this out already, this is the last Raucous Caucus on Tuesday night at 7. We do have other places to go. You can check out my website, marklevinetalk.com, to see where the Raucous Caucus goes next. But all three of us are going to be here on WPFW. Garland and I, you can hear every Friday at 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
What's the name of the show?
News Views.
Is that like Blues Clues?
But only with a couple different letters.
We've got quite a number of rhymes on this show.
So, Mark, are you going to have a big blue furry suit or something like that, like Blues Clues?
I think so. No, I was just thinking about rhymes we've done. Was it taxes?
Metal floors, no taxes, no cat taxes.
No, taxes on cactus.
For cactus, yeah.
Right, all the things that came up during our show. And, Terry, you're still hosting What's at Stake tomorrow at 10.
What's at Stake, and in fact, tomorrow at 10 o'clock again, we're going to have this great show with Joel Kotkin, one of the premier futurists in the United States. I mean, he's written just scores of books. He's superb in understanding where the country is headed socially, economically, et cetera, and well, well respected.
I mean, Did he write a book called Where Are We Going and Why Are We in This Handbasket?
No. I think that was Stephen Colbert.
Okay.
But, same difference.
His books, the book we're going to be featuring tomorrow, is one of them is on the post-familiarist world, which is post-family world, since families essentially are just not being created anymore. That's just a reality, and it's not just America. It's across the world. And we're also going to be looking at the book, The America in America in 2050, when we'll be at the 400 million population and the changes that are going to happen because of that. Some of them are very exciting and very good. It's not all negative, believe me.
And there's still time to join us at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. If you want to come down, if you're listening to us and want to say goodbye, we'd love to have you join us.
Walmart. Guys, we can't go out without talking about Walmart. Yeah,
right.
I mean, we got to let Walmart. Yeah. For those of you who have been in a cave lately, of course, Walmart workers across the country are walking out. They are coming to work, and they are paid so little that the company actually helps people fill out the papers for their employees fill out the papers for food stamps.
Wow.
Last Saturday, a horrible sweatshop in Bangladesh that makes cheap goods for Walmart burned down. I believe there was about 112 or so people worked, of course, on the upper floors. The lower floor caught on fire. If I'm not mistaken, they were making around 24 cents a day or something like that. But so you can and I who not I because I don't go to Walmart. But for those of us who go to Walmart can have our cheap goods made in some sweatshop and somebody's suffering for it and Americans are losing their jobs for it. We had what was similar to, what was the dress factory fire back in the,
100 years ago.
100 years ago.
It was in New York, Brooklyn. There's some, I think it's in New York City.
Yeah.
But the beginning of the international, it's a ladies' garment workers ILGWU. It began because 100 years ago there was a fire in the factory, and they locked the doors to keep the workers from escaping during their lunch.
We didn't want them to take a break.
And they were locked on the outside, and 100 plus people were trapped in that fire.
And that's exactly what
happened. That was America 100 years ago, but thanks to Walmart, still have these things occurring, making our products. They're just doing it in Bangladesh.
Yeah. One of the biggest cultural mistakes, you know, is Americans thinking just because we got rid of the garment district and some of the sweatshops in Manhattan is to think that there aren't sweatshops in the world. They're everywhere at this point, and they're supported by us. Let's be honest about it. 85% of all toys are made abroad. 85%. Only 15% made in America or even in North America. And this is going to astound you, 95% of all clothing is made in China, Bangladesh, some of the South American countries, et cetera, outside of the United States, 95%. So somehow that we got to realize, guys, you know, that we live in a world economy and we got to accept that and find to figure out a way to make the whole world economy just in terms of workers. Let me give you one figure I did on the Walmart, guys. And this, you know, you can check my math on this because I still can't quite believe it myself. But anyway, the four owners of Walmart collectively last year earned $107 billion. Four people put in their pockets $107 billion.
Right. They're all the descendants of Sam Walton.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the total net profit or whatever was like $15 billion.
Right.
Well, now, here's the thing about it.
The four together combined would make them, if they were one person, the richest person in the entire world.
They own
more than Bill Gates, more than Warren Buffett, more than even the Koch brothers.
They own as much as the bottom 40% of America in wealth.
And yet their workers can't get health care.
They can't afford it.
Their workers barely make over minimum wage.
To understand $107 billion, just divide it up. If you paid a bunch of teachers, all teachers, $62,000 a year, that would work out to 34,000 teachers being hired in every state.
Wow.
107 divided 62,000 divided by 50, you'll get 34,000 teachers available for every state in America.
Well,
that's what $107 billion is.
And here's the thing about it. And this is what's, you know, the moral component of it. Let's just say you are a person and you are the family that owns however many it was and you net $15 billion in profit, okay? When you have, let's just say they already are worth $100 billion, whatever, but let's say last year you net $15 billion in profit. So you got $15 billion. That amount of money is only on paper anyway. Because you have everything you need. You couldn't possibly buy anything else. So the only way, in fact, if you've got $15 billion, one day you got 17, the next day you got 14. Because in reality, your investments are going up and down and, you know, the monetary speculation around the world is changing. So it's a vague figure of what you have in dollars.
There's another way of love.
Here's what I was going to say to finish this up. So let's say you got $15 billion. You don't need, you know, you can't do anything with it. And you've got all these employees who are on food stamps, who are cold, whose children are hungry. And someone says to you, look, tell you what, you're not doing anything with this money. How about you take $2 billion of it, which you probably wouldn't take. You take $2 billion of your $15 billion, and you give your employees a decent salary, and you give your employees health care coverage. How about it, guys? Nope. Why? Well, gotta have that extra $2 billion. What are you gonna do with it? Well, I don't even know that it's there really because I have to check my accountant to find out if it's there. But I'm not gonna give the people who are making this money for me anything because I just wanna be able to look on paper and see that I got $15 billion.
Well, that was exactly my point. I went and I looked up how many Walmart employees there are. There are about 2 million Walmart employees. So if we gave the Walmart family $1 billion, which again, it's very hard to spend $1 billion, and took the other $99 billion and spread that out over the 2 million employees, each employee of Walmart could have $50,000 more. Every one of those minimum wage employees could get $50,000 more. Imagine what that would do for the economy. They could put their kids into college. They could afford to buy a new car. They could afford to live the middle class dream if only the people who ran Walmart were not so selfish.
And they're not even asking for that. The average employee makes $8.81 an hour. They're asking for maybe 14 or 15 bucks an hour. And let's face it, $15 an hour is $30,000. That's still nothing. But they're asking for, say, 15 bucks an hour and health care coverage. They're not asking for $2 billion. You know what I mean? They're asking for a small amount, and this unbelievable greed that these people have to say, I got to have a couple extra billion dollars.
Go ahead, Terry.
Well, just, you know, I mean, you know, we've got to take responsibility for this ourselves, too. The average person on the first day of Black Friday, the average person, which this astounds, considering we're still in an economic kind of downturn, we're not out of the economic downturn yet. The average person spent $423 on that one day in Black Friday. Now, you know, if you got four kids, five kids, six kids, eight kids, fine, spend $423. I'm not going to spend $423 for Christmas. I can tell you that. I love my wife, but she ain't getting no $423.
$3 belong to me, Terry. Don't forget.
There's only $420, Terry.
Right. You know, we've got to take responsibility because we play into this. And what we really need to do is start honoring workers and laborers and getting in the streets like they did in the past with the workers and with the picketers and supporting them. We have to do that as a people. They are the middle class, not managers and, you know, scientists and doctors. The middle class is the workers.
And I'm proud to say that on the Raucous Caucus, we have done lots of shows on unions, on labor rights, whether it's Walmart or other big corporations. We talked about the hostess strike. But we've been talking about union rights for years.
Oh, yeah.
How it is that unions gave us the weekend and gave us overtime. And, you know, if you don't like unions, then you got to give up your weekends and your overtime, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know where I go, guys, believe it or not? I go to Costco. You know, Walmart says, we can't do that. We can't afford it. God only knows why, how they could say that with all those billions of dollars. Do you know Costco, most of their employees are unionized. The overwhelming majority of their employees, including many of their part-time employees, have health insurance.
That's good to know.
Costco does it right. They treat their employees right. Look up Costco to how they treat their employees. They pay them a good price, a salary. They give them benefits, and they still make a profit. So maybe they don't make $15 billion in profit, but they make a tremendous profit at Costco. You know what? I'd rather go spend my money there.
Absolutely. I certainly would. I was just thinking about other shows we've done. We've done shows on race. We've done shows on religion. I remember one show right here at Ben's Next Door, Garland, where we tried to resolve all the problems in the Middle East.
Yeah, I think we did.
In an hour. I think we did, but I forgot the answer. I'm not sure.
A few little bumps in the road there. They didn't get the memo over there.
We've done shows.
I've got the answer for that.
What's that?
I've got the answer to solve all the problems in the Middle East.
You do? And what's that?
I do. This would work. This would really work. I promise you. The main problem and the main tension, of course, is between the Palestinians and Israel. There's all the other chaos going on, but that's one constant, right?
Right.
All we need to do I know this is going to sound ridiculous, but it's, trust me, it would work. All you got to do is put right on the border between the Gaza Strip and Israel a huge, secure, but a huge General Motors plant, and hire everybody in Gaza that you possibly can to work in that plant. Because until you address poverty and unemployment and all of the economic problems that are in Gaza and other parts of the Middle East, you're never going to solve nothing. Build a plant there, hire the people, give them a decent job, and watch the, you know, the other groups just sort of fade away as you create some kind of economy and some kind of security. So it's got to be done. Come on.
It's a good point, Terry, because around the world, you know, in history, around the world, wherever there's poverty and unemployment, you're always going to have a higher incident of crime, or whether it's terrorists. If you've got an area where there are a lot of 22-year-old men running around with no jobs, whether it's in the inner city in, Baltimore City, or whether it's anywhere in the world, wherever there is poverty, there's always a higher incidence of bad things happening. So that's a very good point, that to address the issue of poverty in that area would certainly have a very, very positive influence.
A huge effect. People go to the extreme when they're pushed to the extreme. That's it.
And we've done shows on everything from...
slavery? We had a guy. That was a great show, the slavery guy.
That was a great show. Slavery. I was thinking of, we did shows on, certainly in Afghanistan and Iraq, around the globe. But also right here at home, I remember we did a show on the drug war. We've done shows on climate change. How many shows have we done on climate change?
Yeah, a bunch of them.
Warming.
A lot.
Virtually every topic. I'm trying to think of a topic we didn't deal with. We talked about. Go ahead.
One of my favorite shows, and they vary, you know, not just on religion, but we've literally done shows on sort of a universal spirituality.
Uh-huh.
And I remember one show we had Joel Siegel as a guest. And, you know, I was touched. I mean, they were beautiful, beautiful shows. I mean, for one or two shows, we were not raucous. You know, we just were respectful of each other and affectionate even, and certainly understanding the spiritual connections between all of us, which is essential.
And also, I'd like to thank, the Raucous Caucus, listeners, because on many instances during the fund drive when we called and we asked our listeners to donate, I mean, we had some really nice, some really, you know, good nights where we had people, you know, donate $500 at a time.
We had people come join us here on the Raucous Caucus and become part of it. And by the way, obviously we've got to thank Nizam Ali
and all
the people at Ben's Next Door for taking us here, for putting us in the back. We're still here tonight, our last night, again, 1211 New Street, if you want to join us. To do this as many times and to give us this space, which is such a wonderful space, such a wonderful restaurant, and we really got to thank everybody, all the staff at Ben's that have helped, well, make this possible.
Yeah, one of the things I remember that's very dear to me, that meant a lot to me, and that was we during one of the fund drives, we had people, if you pay whatever, you can sit down, you can have dinner with the three of us. And one of the guys that came down was a Republican.
I remember that.
He said, I'm a conservative, and we said, well, what do you think of the show? He says, well, I don't agree with anything you guys say. He says, but I listen to the show because I get a lot of yucks. And he sat down, and he had dinner with us, and we talked, and it felt good to know that someone who doesn't agree with us, and in fact, that's the best listener you can possibly get, because somewhere down there you feel like something that you say may just...
We found some points of agreement, even with him in that night. Now, maybe it's just because we were drinking a lot, but we did find some points of agreement into the night.
Yeah, one of my favorite shows was the very recent show we did, and Mark, thank you so much, and Dan, thanks for being part of it as well, you know, with the close-up group.
Yeah, the election night was a very special night. It really was.
Yeah, I love that show, and going, you know, tooth and nail with the Libertarian, who was a fine gentleman. I mean, truly a fine gentleman, and very quick-witted. We had a ball with him. And, you know, we even found some points. I don't know if we expressed them that night, but I know I did afterwards. We found some points in common, which is another thing that we've encouraged listeners to do, to understand that there are issues that we have a common purpose in, even with Libertarians, even with Republicans. If we don't look for those, we're not going to make progress.
It was good to hear from the students from all across the country, including some that were conservative and asked us some very tough questions.
Every time I mention that show, I point out that the students asked better questions during that show than were ever asked in any of the presidential debates.
By the way, you could still find that show if people are interested. Of course, there's video of that show at marklevinetalk.com on my website, marklevinetalk.com. If you go there, you can find really almost every past show we've done in the Raucous Caucus. You can search for a topic, and then whether your topic is death penalty or marijuana legalization or abortion or
it's the banks. It's the banks, stupid.
It's the banks, stupid. Right, we've done a lot of shows on the banks. But you can find that election night show and also find some information on the future of the Raucous Caucus. All there on my website. Please, please don't forget us. Check it out right there. So, in terms of other shows, I'm trying to think. We spent a long time talking about the primaries and all the different crazy people that rose to the top at one point or another. Whether it was Rick Santorum, I remember Michelle
Herman Cain.
Herman Cain, he gave us a lot of laughs. Or any of the others. At one time, Terry, I even seem to recall you and Garland saying Newt Gingrich was going to win the nomination. I just got to remind you of that.
Yeah.
Do you remember that after South Carolina? The two of you?
No, I never said anything.
So I'm not, you know, I just got to.
And once I even said I thought Herman Cain would win. Remember that?
Yeah, we all thought you were crazy when you did
that. I must have been out of my mind.
I will say I've had the privilege of working with Newt Gingrich on various special events. I do admire, despite his mistakes, he's a very intelligent man, and I do admire that in him. Even though I disagree with much of what he says. But I never said Newt Gingrich.
Oh, the tape is there, Terry. People can go to the archives. They can find it right there on my website, marklevinetalk.com. I will show you where you said after the South Carolina primary, you thought Newt Gingrich was going to take it. You don't remember, but it's recorded.
I'll bet you $4 I didn't say that.
$4. Well, I got bad news for you guys anyway. Right in my little pocket right now, I got two tickets, and one of them is worth $500 million.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know, but the lottery is worth $500 million. Oh, I think they pull it tomorrow night, and I got two tickets, and I'm guaranteeing you guys one of them is going to be the winner, and then I'll have $500 million.
I'll bet you
$500 million?
That it's not that ticket. Right. Well, wait, speaking of betting, I remember.
The joke will be on you, pal, because I'll be worth a half a bet. I'm going to be like the Waltons.
And that's the salvation. Then the Raucous Caucus will obviously be syndicated across the entire country, right, Garland?
No question. We'll beam it out.
That's a much better bet.
We'll beam it out into space. Even aliens will be listening to it.
That's a much better bet.
And I'll still be poor in comparison to the Waltons.
Again, although this is the last Raucous Caucus, Garland and I will be heard every Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. starting a week from Friday. Terry is still doing What's at Stake tomorrow at 10. And then starting in December, the show's going to be at 11 a.m.
7 a.m., right.
So there are going to be some changes. They're going to basically host music from 7 p.m. on through the evening into the next day. There'll be jazz for all you jazz lovers. So that was a decision that that they made. But
and during the day, it's going to be all public affairs except for the noontime blues, the lunchtime blues, which you got to have those blues in the middle
so
of the
day. So at least
day.
People will know. I think maybe it's a confusion about when there's music and when there's talk. So it'll be talk in the day, jazz at night, except for that noon hour.
And for those WPFW enthusiasts out there, you know, you're going to love the changes. You're going to, you know, the station's going to be great. We've got some great shows coming up. And so listen in and, you know, people resist change, but change happens. It's life. So listen into it. There'll be some changes, but there's still going to be a lot of great stuff. Mark and Terry and I are still going to be around. You'll still hear our, you know, our happy little voices.
Absolutely. So just again, go to my website, marklevinetalk.com. You can hear podcasts and archives and future raucosity.
Yeah, that's right. It ain't over.
We'll definitely be around the corner. So, Terry, I don't know, a final word for the Raucous Caucus from the Doctor of Democracy. What do you want to tell our Pacifica listeners?
You know what I really want to tell them?
What's that?
Forgive me for being a little... No, never mind. I'm perfectly proud to say I love you guys. I really do. You know, and it's been absolutely fantastic working with you, and I thank WPFW for that opportunity. I mean, you guys are wrong most of the time.
Of course, obviously.
I love working with you. It's an absolute hoot, and I'm really grateful that we're going to find ways to continue it, and we'll keep our fans posted.
Yeah, and same here, guys. You know, it's been great. And, you know, we've really grown to be very, very, very close, the three of us. And really close friends. And you
much
know,
as we knock each other.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny because way back when, we were, you know, like brothers, we had our arguments, we had our fallouts, and then at some point we just kind of mellowed out and we just became like, you know, like all three of us became as one. But we're very
close. Don't know about that.
Well, Terry and I became as one. How's that?
There is one. I don't know if people in our audience, if you want to say something, Bill.
And one other thing. We want to thank Daniel Musisi. He is our engineer here. Daniel has been faithful. He's been here.
Every time we've been at Ben's, Daniel's been here.
Yep. And he's done a brilliant job. And there was times when there were changes and, well, they
technical issues. They
didn't quite get to Daniel in time, and he's had to struggle a little bit through some headaches that we put him through, and we couldn't thank him more. I mean, he's done a brilliant job.
Absolutely. And in studio, David Kelly also does a tremendous job.
Daniel, because, I mean, even though this is our last show, you know, we've been having the trouble with Skype and everything else, and he's been working on it, and he got everything perfect today.
So we finally got it right, just in time for our final show.
And we've got Bill, one of our favorite Raucous Caucus members. Bill, what do you have to say to the Raucous Caucus on the way out the door?
Well, I just want to say thank you, gentlemen, for some good entertainment, some good ideas, and a chance to let some of my ideas out into the ether, and hopefully some people heard them. And I want to thank you all for your contributions, and especially right now, because Terry's not here, but I want to thank him for scaring me by saying that he thought the president was going to lose.
So I put in another
month more volunteer time in Virginia than I was expecting to at first. So thank you for that. And okay, guys.
Do you have a favorite Raucous Caucus show, Bill? One that comes to mind is one that you thought was...
I thought...
It's hard because there have been so many.
Yeah, there have been so many, but two that stand out. Getting to see Congressman Conyers again after many years.
He was great. Mm-hmm.
And the time, I forget the gentleman's name, the FBI agent.
Yes.
Yes.
Was also good for the same reason Terry was good for the campaign, scared you to death.
Yeah.
Right. We did shows right on surveillance and how much the government is watching us. We actually did a lot of shows.
Actually, it's
that.
Interesting because that's been borne out, and we've somehow got to get some institutional judgment about this kind of stuff. The David Petraeus incident. Yes. Now, again, okay, maybe you don't want the head of the CIA messing around on his wife. Maybe there's blackmail potential, maybe not. However, do you really want, you know, there's got to be some judgment in terms of what people are looking for when they're going
like
through
the
people's private stuff.
I like the government reading our emails.
And this That's dovetails to what you guys were saying earlier about things that people Americans all across the spectrum, the thing that makes, at least gives us some hope in this country is that there's certain things that the government cannot do in pursuit of its continuance.
I certainly want to take a quick second to thank Congressman John Conyers, you know, an iconic figure in this country, a man who's very busy, who took time out to come down on several occasions. Mr. Conyers took time out to come down to sit with the three of us, to talk with the people that were here. He came to the station. He took calls. Here's a busy man. He has all these things. He has people coming at him every day saying, come here to do this or do that. He would be at voting, and he would jump in a car and rush down here to get to the Raucous Caucus. I can't thank Mr. Conyers
enough. We need to wrap up our final show. Terry, if people want to find you, how do they do that?
Doctor of Democracy, AOL.com.
Doctor of Democracy.
DROF Democracy at AOL.com. Just to help Bill stay inspired, watch out. Petraeus will be the Republican nominee for president.
I don't think so. Garland, how about you?
They can Twitter at Garland Nixon, garlandin@gmail.com, or starting a week from Friday.
We're going to be
at 5 p.m. WPFW.
Garland and me will be here every Friday, 5 to 6,
we'll
your
be
drive
on,
time,
yeah, we'll
on WPFW. You can find me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk. My website is marklevinetalk.com, where you will find all the past Raucous Caucus shows and some future shows. You can check it out. We'll be all there on my website. And also, you can. I have a fan page on Facebook. Stick around, folks. We want it. We want to stay in the public debate and keep talking with all of our great listeners.
And thank you. Thank you, guys. I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank David Kelly, too. Thank David so much for your work.
And Daniel and Benz and Nizam.
And PFW. Like and all the people at PFW for giving us this great opportunity to do this.
So, well, that's it, guys. This is the final Raucous Caucus. Let's just say to everyone, you can be seriously funny. And we tried really hard to do that.
That's it.
In Washington, pick it up.
Have fun while you make a difference.
All right. That's it. We're signing off.
Bye-bye.